Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty, along with special guest Rob Fritz. We'll be taking your calls and questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, or Darren Hefty. We're going to talk about fixing micronutrient issues on your farm today. A lot of micro challenges out there that the guys are facing in terms of availability, things showing up on soil tests and not necessarily showing up in their plants, or about any other issue you can imagine, ratios and different things. Rob, this micronutrient issue is only going to get bigger as we continue to fertilize with NPK and sulfur and maybe zinc, and that's it. And a lot of guys aren't even pulling soil tests on micros. Are you still seeing a lot of tests come through where guys don't have micros?
Oh, I get a lot of them. They don't even have zinc. I can tell you that we are doing a pretty good job of NPK from what I see, and everybody, I mean, I very rarely see something that looks like guys are not doing a good job with N, P, and K. But man, the micros are, they're all over the place, and they're kind of hard. Well, they're harder to understand generally just because what you mentioned prior, ratios are just about as important as part per million, I think. And that's where we start really complex. The complexity really goes to another level. You know, we're beyond just a part per million talk. You know, we're talking about that Mulder's chart where one product will affect multiple products. And it can leave you like completely without a clue pretty quick. So yeah, I've been really excited to play in that. We've been working on it very hard at the farm here right at Baltic, doing experimentation on, you know, super high levels and seeing what happens with tissue tests. And, you know, we even had a 2,000 pound an acre manganese test on the farm. Actually was unintentional, but those unintentional ones sometimes teach us a lot. And, you know, nobody should use that number, but when you have college kids running spreaders, you know, every once in a while you get a surprise and it turns out to be, hey, we're going to watch this now the rest of the season and see what happens.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on out there. Hey, Rob, we've gotten a lot of mailbag questions. Let's jump right into a couple of those here as we get started today.
It's the mailbag.
Got a question. This is from George. Let's see. It doesn't say where he's. Oh, Red River Valley. George up in the Red River Valley. He said, got heavy ground. We're working all our ground, but here's a fertilizer question for you. And also a comment here about row cleaners. We work all our ground, but we're spreading urea, ESN, ammonium sulfate, all three in one pass. Question is, should I treat the urea with Instinct 2? Should we still keep using the ESN? Do you think that's worth it? And we're going into corn with all of this fertilizer. And we're averaging 170 bushels. All right, Rob, what do you think about those three sources of nutrients in heavy ground in the Red River Valley?
Well, I would normally say that's the first time I've heard of all three of them going in at the same time. But what I would normally
tell, trying to spread the risk, I guess.
Right. What I, you know, obviously AMS and ESN, you've already covered that. You have a delayed response product. So if you are doing it right in the spring and you need nitrogen for that plant, I don't know that we want to do any treatment if you're working it in the ground. The reason why is it can take a month to 2 months for AMS to fully become available. You know, your ESN is delayed response. So if we go too far into this no response positioning, you may not see anything for that plant early. So I would be, if he's working it in the ground and he needs N right away, I don't know that I would.
Yeah, that's the question is if it's getting worked in right away and how that's all getting applied. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of difference there when we're talking about nitrogen in terms of delivering it in a plant available form. We like using some ammonium sulfate on the farm just for how cheap we get the sulfur that way sometimes, you know, depending on how the product's priced and how much trucking there is and so forth. It's generally a good way to get sulfur at the same point. So, yeah, interesting question. And, yeah, I agree. I've never heard all three going on at the same time, but I certainly understand spreading the risk out. And we definitely like using a nitrogen stabilizer when nitrogen prices are high. We're putting out big rates well ahead of when the corn crop is going to need it. And also, if you're going to just lay it on top of the ground and leave it, you definitely need one. Thanks for the question. We really appreciate that, George. I got another question. This one's from Gordon. He said, I'm wondering how many inches away from the corn seed are in-furrow fungicides and in-furrow insecticides ineffective at providing economical protection? The reason why we're looking at utilizing a new technology to put in-furrow applications in a 2 to 3 inch band with the seed being in the center of that 2 to 3 inch band. Just wondering if that's worth it. We're in 15 inch rows for corn. If the technology has return on investment for 30 inch rows, it'll be even more so for 15s. So in-furrow fungicide, in-furrow insecticides, how close to the seed do they need to be?
Well, they need to be very, very close. On the fungicide side especially, we're looking at something where we can put that right over the top of the seed would be ideal. Now, I'm trying to get a visualization, but it sounds like he's banding that over the top of the seed so the seed will be contacted.
Yes.
If, you know, so I think he's in the right spot.
So if you're 2 to 3 inches wide, spreading it out, that's kind of pretty much hit most of that roots.
Insecticide, yeah. Perfect. You know, that back in the old days, when we first came out with Capture, you remember they had a little sprayer nozzle to band it, you know, kind of throw it down like a T-band, and that's just giving you more coverage.
All right, taking your calls and questions all throughout the show today. We're going to talk about micronutrients, but also any agronomic topic you want to bring up. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic is proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation. And patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
1 year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run fans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today I'm joined with agronomist Rob Fritz, and Rob's enjoying some of the questions that are coming in, and looking forward to talking about those here in a little bit. First, I want to talk a little bit about the grain markets. Kind of having a rough week here. I'm not sure if Scott Harms with Grain PhD is up for this. You ready for this? This could be a tough conversation, Scott.
It's always more fun when the markets are up to talk about the grain markets, but I guess it's the chosen profession that I've had that I've got to come rain or shine.
I just don't understand it though. I mean, we're having a rough week, and we got some positive news, probably the most positive news we've had in a while about the U.S. and China trade issues. So, what's really going on here?
Yeah, I think that's what probably leads to the most disappointment is the fact that we left here on Friday, or at least, you know, after over the weekend and late on Friday, there was some positive news on the trade front. Seems like we're closer to deal than ever. But it appears the weakness this week is tied to the first notice day, which is tomorrow for the March contracts. And there's also the expiring cash contracts that have added to pressure this week. As we approach first notice day, sometimes it's a little bit of a stare down. Who's going to blink first? Who has to get out of the market first? Those that are long the March futures or those that are short in this particular case. And usually it's the ones that are short that went out. In this case, it's no different. So when we started to see a failure earlier in the week, it was the long positions. They have to be out of the close by the close tomorrow or they're risk taking delivery. So they were forced to exit maybe a little more quickly, and a little more aggressively. Than they thought they were going to, so that led to the pressure. And we're also seeing some of the expiration of these contracts. We have basis contracts that are coming due. We have some seed contracts, I think, that are coming due, and so you're seeing some people throw in the towel a little bit on those sales. And when we started to see the market fail, we started to pick up technical selling as the charts break down. So that becomes, you know, selling kind of begets selling. But, you know, last year we were firming the market about this time because we had a smaller South American crop. But 2 years ago, we saw similar price action going into this March expiration. We had weakness into first notice day, and then as soon as we flipped the calendar into March, we saw some real good price strength. So perhaps we're going to see that's what's in store for us this year. You know, a year ago, the March corn contract closed at 368.5. I was looking at this today. Today, we closed at 366.25. And a year ago, we were working with an expected carryover estimate of 2.3 billion bushels. This year, we're looking at, we have a carryover at 1.7 billion bushels, or more than 600 bushels below what we had a year ago, yet we're priced lower. So
yeah.
I think by all fundamental measures, we're at or below value, at least in my opinion.
Yep. I agree. It's kind of strange when you start actually looking at some of those numbers and peeling it back. Okay. So with the recent news on the trade front, can you give us a snapshot look at that and then how quickly we might see some new sales hitting the books?
Yeah. When we left on Friday, the President Trump announced he was going to delay the tariffs. I think that was announced over the weekend. But also that China was going to secure 10 million metric tons of beans. That was a boost. And then it also seems like U.S. and China getting closer to a trade deal that's supposed to include about $50 billion worth of annual ag purchases to narrow up the trade deficit. So the problem is the market gets jerked around with this news, and they have been for better part of 8 to 10 months. So we get negative news or positive news followed by negative news, and we really need to see the sales on the books. I think you'll see that soon. In fact, the corn basis at the Gulf has been firming up here in the recent months, and it's as strong as it's been in months, and you know that means that we should be getting some export demand. So I think there's an urgency to get a deal done. The two heads West State want to meet in Florida next month, and they're not going down there, you know, to work out a deal. They're going to basically there for pictures and a signing. So I think they want to get something done soon.
That would be great. Now I know you've been kind of bullish on corn prices, as have I, but it doesn't seem like that's changed much. So what kind of discussions are you having right now with clients regarding marketing activity?
Yeah, I mean, I've been kind of friendly, and that hasn't changed for me with this price action. You know, we're priced below where we were a year ago, as I said, with a tighter balance sheet. In addition, I think the new crop corn values need to firm up in order to buy some additional acres. So regarding pricing activity for farmers, we're doing nothing here. It's a good opportunity for end users to step in and get some coverage. But, you know, we've taken a lot of calls in the last couple of weeks regarding those expiration of basis contracts, those that are just willing to go ahead and price the grain. And then they'll look for a way to participate in the market on the upside. So we've been buying some futures. For those guys, been buying some call options and some call spreads in order to get back into the market. So, as I said before, any marketing plan includes, you know, action points based on price and on time. So if we haven't reached our price objectives by, say, March 15th or so, you know, we're going to have to look to be more aggressive because we want to get some additional sales on the book before spring. But as of right now, we're going to be patient, and you know, I think better days are ahead.
I sure hope so. You know, there's plenty to worry about now that we don't have to necessarily be doing a whole ton of marketing. We can get ourselves set up for that. And I think one of the big things that I've heard coming out of our winter workshops that we were doing around the country is a lot of questions about Grain PhD and about that software for managing positions so you can see right where you're at for profitability, from a profitability standpoint, and you know how much your grain is marketed and that kind of thing, with just a quick snapshot that you can print out, that you can take right with you to your banker. By the way, my banker was through here yesterday. So, I mean, it's nice to have those things just at one touch where all of a sudden when he shows up unannounced, you can say, yeah, how are you coming on this? And I can just click a button. I like that. You talk just a little bit about how you get started with GrainBridge software? It's free through Grain PhD. And then what kind of support can you expect from the Grain PhD team?
Yeah, when you go to grainphd.com, you can sign up for the free GrainBridge software. There's a lot of other things on there too, but the free GrainBridge software is there, and you sign up. They'll send you a login for GrainBridge, and then once you log in, you can start entering your information. And if you want help getting started, you can give one of us a call at Grain PhD. In about 20 minutes, we can help you, you know, get started, help you to enter the information, find out where to get that started, and then you'll be ready to roll. So as you get more and more comfortable with, you know, the product, Grain PhD, well, they'll support all along the way. Any questions you have, just give us a call. And then if you need help working through how to best use futures and options as a part of your plan to figure out what products are going to be the best fit for you as you kind of develop a marketing plan, you know, we've got risk specialists here on hand as part of Grain PhD to help you out. So just go to grainphd.com to get started.
Yeah, a lot of good resources there at grainphd.com, and one of those guys that you may get a hold of is Scott Harms. I really appreciate all the information today, as always, even though it may not be the most fun time to talk about marketing right now with where the markets are at. Thanks a lot, Scott. Really appreciate it.
All right, take care, Darren.
Rob, I get a question that just came in. And we get a lot of these fertility. Whenever Rob happens to be here, the fertility questions just start rolling in. You ready to take one, Rob, about your planter? This one's from Russell. He said, wanted to put fertilizer on my planter, mostly no-till. And I've heard you say that phosphorus should be put into the ground. Is this possible and economical to do with my planter? And then I'm wondering, how much could I put in furrow? How much should I be putting in a 2x2? We're in North Mississippi, farming soils with a CEC from 5 to 8 in a corn soybean rotation. Right now we're getting 45 bushel beans, 140 bushel corn.
Okay. Yeah, that's you know, you're in a pretty light soil type. What I would do in that situation is I would try to move it to a 2x2, so our safety would come up, because I would honestly say in a 5 CEC, something like that, I don't really want to put any measurable amount of fertilizer too near that seed, just out of safety. But as far as product choices, I mean, obviously, we've had a lot of success with guys running like a strip-till system and putting down 1034-0 in the liquid, or MAP down at, you know, 5 to 7 inches. But if you're going to go in with your planter in a 2x2, you know, you can be safe at 5 gallons to 10 gallons of starter easily in that light soil and still not have, you know, any issues with the plant safety side. Because one of the things about phosphorus is it's usually tagged, usually almost always tagged with some nitrogen and possibly potash, which are going to increase the salt load.
Hey, thanks for the question, Russell. Yeah, on those light soils, get it out there a little bit away from the seed, improve your safety, and you should see a good impact on your crop. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions after this. Stay tuned.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
With the success of the Case IH Steiger Quad Track and Magnum Road Track tractors, it's no secret why Case IH is the leader of the track. So it wasn't surprising when the competition started imitating us, because Case IH offered the first five-axle design to give you more power to the ground with less burming and compaction, all to help you be more productive. Still, we're flattered. In fact, if we weren't already red, we'd be blushing. To learn more, visit caseih.com/tracks.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, and we just had an interesting question about wheat fertility, and a comment was made about side dressing wheat. This was I think a week or two ago on the show that we were talking about this, and a grower, John down in Kansas, said he was side dressing wheat. He sent a little video, and I just pulled that up. Rob and I were watching that. They're banding anhydrous on 15-inch spacings, driving through, you know, really small wheat. That was a little different. I haven't seen that before.
Yeah, I've never seen tracks on the applicator side. That's completely new. There must be a knife in there, and the tracks are following the ground or something.
Really side dressing, but I didn't know what else to call it. And I get it. I mean, that's always interesting what you're going to say or how you're going to term something that nobody else is doing. So, yeah, it was neat. It was really kind of neat. Okay, let's jump back into the phone lines. Get Ty Fickenshire with us. He's down in Nebraska. Ty, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, good. I know you get down into Kansas. Do you ever see that? Do you see application of anhydrous on 15-inch rows driving right through standing wheat?
I have, and I would imagine maybe call that underdressing, but I don't think I'd want to underdress too much this time of year. So.
Yeah, I don't know. It looked interesting for sure. Today we're talking about micronutrients, and I know you work with a lot of strip till, but you work with a lot of farmers. What are you finding as application methods for them getting micronutrients out in the field?
You know, in our part of the world, we're pretty fortunate. We have a lot of center pivots. We have the ability to put some through the center pivots, but you know, a lot of times if we need to put down some micros, we'll look at how we can put it in with a starter application or a side dress application. You know, the issue we've typically run into with a lot of the dry applications with the smaller rates, it's a little more difficult to really hit that target rate if you're putting out 2 or 3 pounds an acre. So if we can look at a alternative method to get that out there is what we've kind of gone back to anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of curiosity around it, but I'm finding the other thing is that Rob and I were talking about this earlier. There's a lot of guys that don't have micronutrients on their soil test, or if they do, they only have zinc. Are you seeing that in your area too?
Yeah, we actually switched labs here just a couple of years ago because of that exact issue, Darren. So we had a lab we're getting recommendations from, and you know, we might get a nitrogen, phosphorus, sulfur, and zinc recommendation when you know, we look at the samples. We're looking at like a boron and iron and manganese that need to be put out there as well. So, we've actually gone with the lab we work with. We do the full gamut of testing anymore just to make sure we're not missing something. And we actually had one customer that requested he wanted a test done for cobalt and another product, another nutrient. I'm drawing a blank on the name now. But yeah, just kind of looking at all the nutrients.
I think you just got Rob's attention here, Ty. As soon as you mentioned cobalt, Rob kind of perked up like this is one of those things he's looking at. What other ones are you looking at?
Probably Rob? Molybdenum.
That was it. Yep. That was it.
Yeah, those are our two new, I guess, things we've started to look at, but basically shouldn't really be paid a lot of attention to until you got most of your other stuff kind of taken care of. But I do think in a soybean, definitely in a soybean with inoculation that we see having a little bit of moly, it's worthwhile making sure that you have some, because like our soils here at Baltic, when we've had them tested, they were undetectable levels. So we kind of thought maybe we should put some out.
So do you put that in as a starter application then, Rob?
We put it out as a broadcast with our pre. So there's a product we've had excellent success with, sodium molybdate, which is a dry water soluble. It's very cost effective, and you're talking 5 to 7 ounces an acre is multiple years of molybdenum.
So you're really not getting a negative effect on the crop from that sodium being in there with it, then? Correct?
It's so minor. I mean, what I mean. It's so minor because. 1 part per million is more than enough for any crop ever, but we were sub sensitivity level on the soil test.
Sure. Okay.
And we kind of got led that way because we had a foliar, and we've watched this foliar that worked from year to year on the farm. And the thing was, is it had molybdenum in it, and we would get just really good results. And we're like, is it because of, what they have going on? Or is it because it's the only time our plants have ever seen molybdenum? So then that's what led us down that road. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I think you might find that to be an issue. And you might be surprised to find, that you aren't finding 1 part per million, which is really kind of the target.
Well, and the issue we're coming across was the cost of the analysis was rather high, and we're not going to do that on a 2.5 acre grid by any means, but pulling a composite across the field and testing for that is really what this customer is looking to do. So
sure. Yeah. And I think if you're low, you're going to be low everywhere, because I don't know where we're getting it from. I mean, I can't tell you where we would be. It would be it getting in the system unless you're maybe a manure guy where you might have it in a feed ration.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, definitely something to look at. I mean, that's, like I said, when we're looking at, the yield levels we're looking at, pushing 300 bushel on a lot of these corn crops and trying to break that magic 100 bushel an acre on soybeans, it's going to take more, in my opinion, it's going to take more than just the 4 major nutrients we've commonly applied. I think we've got to look at the full buffet and see what needs to be applied to really impact yields positively.
No, I totally agree. And the other thing that we're seeing with farmers, just talking through, hey, when's the last time you put on copper? When's the last time you put on manganese and some of these different nutrients. And guys are like, man, I've been farming 20 years. I never have. And you start figuring out, well, what's your average yield over the last 20 years? And then look at how many pounds of removal there are per year. And I get it. It's not that many pounds per year. But when you multiply that times 10 or 20 years of non-application, it's not hard to figure out why you got behind. And there's got to be a time to pay the piper at some point.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing we've really started looking at is Mulder's chart, and it's been around for years, and how did the different nutrients interact with one another. And we've been kind of trying to put together a sheet that, you know, if we're low in this, how's it affecting the other nutrients, how we need to adjust those other nutrients to make them available to the crop. But, yeah, it's more than just a one-to-one relationship on any of these, trying to figure out the perfect balance to really drive yield and be sustainable at the same time.
Yeah, we got kind of a cool event coming up next week on our farm. We've got Neil Kinsey coming in for 3 days to be talking about nutrients, and I know we're going to spend some time on the micros. That's something you can find information about that at agphd.com for anybody listening today that's interested in hearing from one of the foremost experts in the world and a guy that we like to turn to for a lot of these questions, just to see, you know, another opinion with a lot of experience behind it. It's pretty neat. And like you said, Ty, guys down in Nebraska right now and other areas of the country shooting for 300 bushel corn and 100 bushel soybeans. Micronutrients are going to be a big deal, no doubt. I've been talking with Ty Fickenscher down in Nebraska. He's an agronomist with LUMA. Ty, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
You bet. Thank you. Stay warm.
Yeah, that's easier said than done right now. It's been awfully cold, no doubt about it. Hey, Rob, a quick question for you here. This one comes from, didn't leave a name. He's from South Central Minnesota. He said, question regarding organic matter. We're in South Central Minnesota. Our yield goal is 230. We've got some spots that are 12% organic matter. I'm wondering, if you get 20 pounds of nitrogen per 1% of organic matter, is that true in these types of soils as well? And what would you recommend to use for nitrogen through those areas?
Yeah, those high nitrogen spots like that.
High organic matter.
High organic matter, the nitrogen release isn't as great because they tend to be actually something is causing that organic matter not to be broken down in a natural way, unless it was some sort of peat that they broke up and they're actually on the downslide from that really, really high organic matter situation. But when I see high, like abnormally high organic matter, it usually means I don't have enough soil microbe activity that I'm actually breaking it down. So then I'm concerned, you know, that you're not going to get that nitrogen release because that is a microbe system.
Yep, great question. And I know it sounded too good to be true, didn't it? 12% organic matter times 20 pounds. Wow, I won't have to put any on. Probably not the case, but I would start small and then just add a little bit as you go. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions after this.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply EndoPrime SC. MycoApply EndoPrime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply EndoPrime SC at EndoPrimeCorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro Liquid Fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro Liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Build with the best. When you choose Morton Buildings for your next farm storage building, you'll experience the Morton advantage at every step, starting before the walls even go up. Since the value of our buildings is in its ability to protect what you have stored inside, we ensure that every component is researched and tested to withstand the elements in all weather conditions. And we back it up with the strongest warranty in the business. Looks better, built stronger, lasts longer. Learn more at MortonBuildings.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
We started utilizing the Dewar React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty along with Rob Fritz. We're talking about fixing the micronutrient issues on your farm. We've got Stephanie Zelenko with us right now with AgroLiquid, and her family farms up in Michigan as well. Stephanie, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good, good. All right, we've already had a few questions about this. Hey, we're dramatically short in micros. How do we go about not only just getting a successful crop this year, but trying to fix things for the long run? And I'm sure you get micronutrient questions on just a variety of crops around the country. Where do you start with that?
I do. And, you know, starting with the soil test and looking specifically what micronutrients we need to address is always going to be my first step. And if I'm dealing with those really low levels, manganese is very common here in Michigan. I kind of do a two-step approach to that, where I'm looking at putting some dry broadcasts out there to help, you know, build those soils long-term, but then I'm still focusing with an AgroLiquid manganese product in furrow or a foliar application to make sure that crop has, you know, what it needs for that growing season.
I got a few questions for you that have come in just over the last couple of weeks here for, hey, if you ever get Dr. Jerry on or you get Stephanie on, here's what I'd like to know. One of them is, when do I use a blended micronutrient product like, say, a Micro EX or a Micro 500 versus using individual micros in the field?
So my typical recommendation for that is I'm always going to put out either Micro EX or Micro 500 at a quart per acre. And then when I'm dealing with low micronutrient levels, I'm going to spike in those individuals. So my example, again, with manganese, which is very commonly low in Michigan, I typically put out a quart of Micro 500 and then add an additional quart of manganese in there to that low manganese level.
Okay. Then another question, what is safety like in furrow for micros? Is there a limit to how many you can put in, and which micros should we avoid putting in furrow?
So each of those micros are going to have a little bit different safety behind them. The ones that I'm most worried about are going to be copper and boron as far as in-furrow applications, just because you can get toxicity pretty easily. But anything else, when you're talking those combo products that have, you know, sulfur or nitrogen in them, I'm going to also watch that if that's kind of a backbone to those micronutrient products.
I get a question. This one's from Tom in Iowa, and he said, I've been using AgroLiquid's Pro Germinator. I know their chelation process is different. I've actually seen this show up longer in my crop throughout the season. I'm very happy. Does the same process hold true with micronutrients?
Yes. So the same technology that we put in, the flavanol polymer technology, that's the kind of the backbone of Pro Germinator, is actually built into all of our products, including those micronutrients. So it's going to help protect them from any losses or tie up in the soil and allow those nutrients to be available longer term throughout that growing season.
Had a number of farmers say their pH is low and they're interested in putting something like your Liberate CA product in furrow to try to improve nutrient availability right around that seed zone. Can you talk about that Liberate CA and how having calcium availability can really help?
Absolutely. So Liberate CA is our calcium product, and the thing that makes that product unique than other calciums on the market is it is compatible with phosphorus. So many calciums on the market, you can't tank mix and do one application. So you can mix this right in with ProGerminator and apply that in furrow. And it does a really good job of kind of doing a microclimate for that seed zone if you have pH issues. Now, it's not going to correct that soil pH. We're not recommending it as a liming or a soil amendment, but it is going to kind of help those micronutrients right in that seed zone. And when you can mix it with something like Micro 500 and your ProGerminator, it's just going to increase the overall availability of all those nutrients.
Yeah, and that's another thing, being able to mix calcium right in there with a phosphorus fertilizer and those kind of things. That's kind of unique, isn't it?
It is. You know, it's the only product in the market that I know that can be mixed with those phosphorus products.
Yeah, there's always something different here and little twists, and you think, oh, I don't know, you know, I can't use that. It doesn't mix. Well, yes, here we go. We've got one that actually does, where you can mix some calcium in with a phosphorus fertilizer. That's pretty cool. I've been talking with Stephanie Zelenko with AgriLiquid. Stephanie, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
You're welcome.
Rob, I got a question. This is from Anthony, and he said, when the opportunity arises to double crop during a single season, there are certain strategies to adopt for a soybean crop starting later in the season. Example would be a vegetable crop early followed by a soybean crop. Soybean crop on average would be planted around June 15th. Any thoughts on what row spacing or population might help me planting my double crop soybeans?
Well, generally, I would say history tells us up here, when we do plant later, we need to plant thicker than we would normally plant, just because the time frame that we have to grow is reduced, and we want those plants to stretch out and have a little more crop, intercrop competition that pushes them taller so that we can get, you know, higher pod set. And then the other thing that a delayed plant, you know, kind of one of the things that we like to do is obviously the, you know, almost closer to solid seed. So 15s, 20s are better than 30s because we're just not going to have the time to get that side branching we do when we do full season. So those are two things I would say that I feel like everybody would face, you know, when we're doing really early planting is when we can have more or have a lower population and stretch those plants out further because they're going to have more time to branch out and actually fill those rows. And then it's fine if they're shorter in that scenario.
Thanks for the question. We really appreciate that. Got another one here. This is from Cedric. And he said, I sent you some pictures. I've got some weeds. The temperature is cool, but there are some weeds growing. He must be further south, of course. But it looks like we've got some creeping Charlie in there. We've got some clover species. Rob, he's looking for a recommendation what to spray to try and kill those perennial kind of weeds in a lawn type situation.
Yeah, and I looked at the pictures, and I have another property, and I had some of the same problems. In fact, I don't think I had any grass left. It was just those broadleaves. And a continuous spring-fall application of actually dicamba or Banvil. Now, understanding what that does to any of the nearby plants. So we need to be, you know, late in the season, so we're drifting is
well,
not an issue.
Here we are. We're early in the season, so we could get out there before a lot of those flowers and stuff start going.
Right.
But the tough thing is you want to be where you've got those weeds actively growing, but nothing else is, and I don't know if you're going to actually find that time just perfectly.
No, but the fall is more forgiving. But I will tell you, the Banvil or the dicamba will really do a good job on those species, and it was the only thing I used that turned the tide. 2,4-D wasn't strong enough. Now, you could do a 2,4-D Banvil combo That works great. Trimec is one of those that's commercially available. A lot of people will have, you know, will tell you to use Trimec. I think that would be a good, you know, a good product choice.
Yeah, I like Freelex just from the standpoint that I'm not going to have as much off-target movement. The challenge is you got to use a strong rate, and you're going to have to come back multiple times. And I get it. Sometimes people just want to say one and done, and I want to be out of this situation. But you're just not going to be when you've got those perennial roots with all that root system. Being realistic about it, you're going to spray a couple of times a year for the next 3 years. And if you do that and you stick with it, you'll definitely knock that stuff back, and eventually you'll wipe it out. But you gotta be diligent trying to get those weeds out. Perennial weeds can be pretty tough. There's no doubt about that, and they take a little bit extra to try to kick them out of there. Thanks for the question. Got an email. This is from South Africa. This is from Hannes. I'm a farmer in South Africa. Been watching your shows. Downloaded all your apps. The one thing I'd ask for is, could you in the future make a metric option available on your apps? So we could convert it easily. Hey, thank you for watching our show and checking out our content. And yeah, hopefully it's helpful for you in South Africa. We definitely could do that. I'll talk to our programmers about that and see if we can have a metric option on some of our apps as well. Thanks for the email today. Really appreciate that. Taking your calls and emails throughout the rest of the show here at 844-44-AG-PHD or radio at agphd.com. We'll be right back.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Using N-Serve Nitrogen Stabilizer with fall fertilizer applications keeps nitrogen available into the spring for maximum crop growth. Field trials in Iowa show N-Serve delivered an average revenue increase of $22.96 per acre, and N-Serve is the only recognized nitrogen stabilizer product in the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy because it reduces nitrate leaching. That's max profit in an environmentally sustainable way. Calculate your field's profit potential at nitrogenmaximizers.com.
1 year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I had a call from John earlier from Minnesota, and he said he just wanted to add more grain marketing sections to our workshops or have a special grain marketing workshop in the future. Hey, John, thank you. We really appreciate that feedback. We'll talk to the Grain PhD folks and see if we can get that lined up. Got Jay on with us right now in Southwest Minnesota. Jay, how are you doing today?
I'm just trying to keep warm.
Well, that's a full-time job, no doubt about that. So I'm assuming you guys were just as wet in the fall as we were. Did you get anything done in the fall at all? Nutrients, tillage, anything?
I couldn't get anything done this fall other than harvest. I got 200 bushel corn stalks out there, and nothing got worked last fall, and I'm freaking out on what to do for the spring. We usually disrip everything and then hit it with a field cultivator and apply our pre with some 28% just before with a field cultivator. And now I don't know what we need to be doing. We're looking at maybe a high-speed disc. Is there anything you guys have had experience with or have experimented on your farm with?
You know, the high-speed disc thing is interesting. The one caution that I've got is just the tillage floor. So when you run through the field and you get everything fluffy and it looks great on top, brush that aside a little bit, because those machines do take a little bit of work to get them set just right, and just to make sure that it's not angled down or that it's angled up. That would be a question to take a look at, but it's something that definitely could work, no doubt about that. There's a lot of guys that didn't get tillage done. Rob, what are you doing with that? Because there's some ruts out there from harvest and everything.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things that patience is going to be the most difficult thing, because we were wet in the fall and we'll be wet this spring. You know, any tillage you do, it could potentially, you know, create a lot of compaction and sidewall smearing issues at planting time. So, yeah, I think we're going to have to just be smart about it and slow down a little bit to speed up, because I'm afraid if we start mudding things in, if we don't get the rain to follow it up, we can really create a lot of problems.
How is all that residue going to affect what I've done in the past with my 28% and my pre? Is that going to really screw things up, tie up my N and tie up my pre if I do that on those corn stalks before I touch them?
Yeah, there's a potential you could get some tie-up, no question. You know, I think, is it going to be a big deal in 3 months? Probably not, but it could be a big deal in the short term, because once that residue, you know, starts to break down, obviously some of that N will come back. But no, I your concerns are very realistic ones. You know, one of the ways guys have done that is they've put like 2x2 systems on their planter, or they've been, you know, inject that 28% into the soil, then that takes that tie up away, but it doesn't solve your herbicide issue. The herbicide still could be tied up in that residue, no question.
Well, I already do the 2x2, and that's really worked great for us. I hate to put any more in the furrow or beside the seed. Is there any biologic you guys have played with that will help break down stalks faster?
Yeah, the decomp that we've been working with has helped. I'm a little nervous to say that's going to solve all our problems, because it takes a while to build up those colonies. I do recommend that guys, if they're putting with their pre, put a little sugar with it to really amp up, you know, the biologicals ramping up their amounts or their populations as quickly as possible. But yeah, we're going to be cool, and it's hard to get enough breakdown to really fix that problem in the spring. So I don't want guys to think they can spray this and things are just going to, you know, be better in a week, because obviously we're not going to have that temperature in the spring.
Well, I appreciate the advice.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Jay. Good luck going into the spring. Yeah, this is something we're going to have to fight on our farm too, because there's a lot of fields where we didn't get our strip tillage done, didn't get manure on, a lot of those kinds of issues. All right, Rob, got a question. This is from Al in Illinois, it looks like. Yes, Al in Illinois. He said, I'm planning on doing your 3-pre soybean program. I've got giant ragweed and some water hemp. I'm planning on using Prowl Authority MTZ, Prowlin Authority MTZ. What rates do you like to see for those products in medium to heavier soils?
Well, we usually run 14 ounces of Authority MTZ here on the farm, and I've run a lot of that to pretty high success as long as we don't have some crazy pH problems.
So that's got a quarter pound to a third pound of Metribuzin in it?
Right, and a decent amount of Authority. As far as Prowl, we've been running a pint of Prowl in our system to very good success. Haven't seen any negatives.
Low weed pressure.
Right.
But yeah, if you've got high weed pressure, you're going to have to bump that up. You may have to even run a full rate if you've got a really weedy mess.
Right, but if you're going in with,
if you're just looking for a little boost for some grass.
Right. Grass boost is all we're doing because obviously, you know, your Authority and your Metribuzin should be handling the broadleaf duty. The other thing, too, is, you know, we're obviously kind of hedging or pushing the maximum of that Prowl because we are going in post-plant pre-emerge. So I like to make sure we caution guys that that's a choice we make and why we're running a really low rate. We're just, you know, making sure we don't burn that stem, you know, burn that plant from splash up. Obviously, the Prowl rate could be much, much higher if you're going true no-till and ahead. And I will say in the past, we have went in this month, which obviously doesn't look like we're going to get that done today, and put full rates of Prowl out in areas where we knew we were coming into a problem and made two separate applications. We ran the Prowl early, and then came in at normal post-plant pre-emerge timing with our Authority MTZ. And we've done that before, like I said, on really high weed pressure situations. Maybe a new piece we picked up or something we've had a problem on someplace.
I got a question from Herb, and he said, I'm sending you one of my soil samples. I didn't have very good results on my corn last year. I'm wondering what your recommendation would be for a 2x2 application with dry fertilizer. Last year, I put on 110 pounds of potash, 125 pounds of MAP, 5 pounds of boron, 10 pounds of zinc, and 60 pounds of ammonium sulfate. I side dressed with 40 gallons of liquid 28% one time due to a lot of rain. Then it was dry after that application. So what do you see in Herb's soil test that would jump out at you? And then how much of the fertilizer program are you comfortable in a 2x2 on one side of the row?
Okay, I'm just looking at it here. You know, 2x2 on one side, we're kind of limited. I usually like to see no more than you'd be 25 pounds of salt in that scenario is a good guide. So, I mean, that's a pretty low number because a pound of N is a pound of salt in the mathematics that I'm kind of using based on just one side of the seed. Your CEC is not very high, so that's what's causing me to think that way. I'd like to see if you're in a 30 CEC ground, 25 to 30 like us, you can get away with a lot more safely. And it looks like your MAP and potash have been, you know, pretty good as far as you're trying to correct it. You know, just looking at the, you know, the results are on your potassium are exceptionally low testing as far as you're only at 87 parts per million. So if there was one thing I would be concerned about is making sure we have enough potash in the system to hold up whatever it is that you're looking to try to grow as a crop.
Yeah, when you've got a situation where whatever I did last year didn't work out so well, we want to try and figure out what happened where it didn't work out. You know, with that side dressing, if it got dry after you side dress some nitrogen, right, a lot of times you just aren't going to get it into the crop.
He did have a really high rate of side dress 28. At 40 gallons, you know, that's 120 units.
Yeah.
That's a lot for a 12 CEC. You may have burnt off some roots.
Yeah, and 5 pounds of boron, you could have an issue putting that in a band. We're doing some higher rates of boron, but it's always in a broadcast. We're doing it on heavy soils, and we've got plenty of calcium out there.
Right.
So there's some tricks to that where that's way more boron than you need. We see a lot of guys on lighter soils spoon feeding the boron, just putting a little bit on several times during the year to avoid having an issue. Hey, thanks for the question. We really appreciate that, Herb. And thanks to everybody who called or wrote in today. And thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.